Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
Hello, welcome to Japan Eats. I'm your host, Akiko Tema, a food writer and the director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deep understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. We are broadcasting live from Brooklyn, New York. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every deli in the supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi, ramen, and izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is still a mystery for many people, and try to demystify it in this program to my cool guests. And my guest today is Kazuko Nagao, the founder of Okonomi, the okonomiyaki shop based in Queens, New York. And okonomiyaki is a Japanese-style savory pancake, which is very popular in Japan. And despite its rich and delicious taste and approachable style, okonomiyaki is yet to be known to the world outside of Japan. And Kazuko has been making okonomiyaki for New Yorkers at street fairs and food events for a decade. But last month, in December 2021, she decided to turn her seasonal okonomiyaki business into regular operations throughout the year. So today we'll discuss what exactly okonomiyaki is, regional varieties of okonomiyaki, which represent the pride of each region, and why Kazuko devotes herself to introducing the charm and deliciousness of okonomiyaki and much, much more. But before we start, Japan Eats is available on Heritage Radio Network website, as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. So please go to iTunes, Stitcher, or Spotify, whichever you listen to, and subscribe to Japan Eats. And please write a review. We really appreciate your feedback. Now, let's start our conversation with Kazuko Nagao. Hello, Kazuko. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me today.
So this is exciting. So congratulations, first of all.
Yes, thank you so much.
All right. So just to get to know you, first of all, where are you from and what did you eat when you grew up?
Okay, so I'm originally from Hiroshima, Japan. And then, of course, one of the most popular dish in the Hiroshima region is okonomiyaki, which is Hiroshima-style okonomiyaki. So I grew up eating those. And, of course, a lot of Japanese cuisine in Japan. Hand, like sushi, yakiniku, ramen, all that kind of thing that I grew up eating. So basically, I really was not exposed to a lot of different kind of cuisine when I was growing up. So I strictly ate most of the Japanese food when I was growing up.
That's interesting. So naturally leads to the next question. When and why did you come to New York?
Okay, so I actually came to New York in the 90s. I went to the SUNY Albany. So I went to university upstate New York. And I went back to Japan and worked a couple of years. And I came back 2001, January, I came back.
Right. So what were you interested in just studying in the States? Or what was the reason you came to study in the States in the first place?
Oh, okay. First place, I was actually came to the United States as an exchange student. So I was going to the Kansai Foreign Language University and I was chosen to be an exchange student. So I went to SUNY Albany. And then after that, I actually transferred to the school and I graduated from the same school. So at the beginning, I came to study English, also get a degree at the university. And then second time I actually came back was I was studying dancing. So I wanted to be a dance instructor of salsa dance, which is a Latin dance. So I came to New York 2001 just to study dancing strictly. I know it's kind of funny.
Well, so you're amazing. Right? Yeah, well, you're always something unpredictable in very, very good way. So another question about you. So outside your economic business, like you'd expect, you have many different job titles and they all sound fun and exciting. So could you tell us about what you do in your life outside of economic business?
Yes, I actually came back to the States. Like I said, I wanted to learn how to dance salsa, and I was dancing every single day for a couple of years. And also, I also got a job, and then I was working at the staffing agency in New York City. And after got a chance to do some other things with my one of my friends started the student support business, like a exchange program. So I was helping her, and then I actually started my own business 2006, and then since which is Notions United, which is my company. And I was doing a lot of like PR, marketing, promotions, business support for Japanese businesses in New York. So some business wanted to expand their business in New York, I did support them. Or some Japanese businesses wanted to do market research or expand their business opportunities in North America, mainly New York. So I support those companies. And also I've been doing publication. It's called Peko Peko. Peko Peko means hungry in Japanese. So I'm doing I've been doing online, the web-based food publication, introducing all kind of food stuff in New York City in Japanese language, which I was covering a lot of restaurants. I've been going to a lot of food events where I usually bump into Akiko-san a lot. Mainly I've been doing a lot of food related business. That's what I've been doing. Yep.
Yeah. I am really curious about your salsa dancing, but I have to have another episode. Right. But just to add, I just found, according to your LinkedIn, you are the owner of Loaves, which is a manufacturer of Japanese milk bread brand.
Yes. This is something other than okonomiyaki. I actually started during the pandemic, because we got, as you know, Akiko-san, everybody was baking bread, right, at home during the pandemic. Everybody. I couldn't even get a yeast to buy from the store early 2020. And then everybody got so much time to, so much time in their hand. And then I actually wanted to do, shokupan, which is the Japanese milk bread. And I've been always wanted to try to make it. So every single day I've been making it, tweaking it, to perfect make one roll, because I had so much time in my hand because I was doing nothing. So every day I try a different recipe, write it down, taste it. The texture that I want. So actually, also that's besides, economy, I actually started during the pandemic. So milk bread, hopefully I can bring one to you so you can taste it. It's pretty good. So.
Right. Well, just to, maybe that's another episode too. Japanese milk bread is very unique, and I can't find it only in Japan, and it's very hard to make. So
yes.
Yeah, I hope I can taste yours one day.
And
sometime
soon. It takes 6 hours to make one loaf. So the process, because you have to, the dough has to rise, rest. So it's a lot of work. Like, that's why I think a lot of bread making business, it has to have a large quantity. Otherwise, it's not, how can I say, you're not going to make money selling one loaf, spending 6 hours just to make one loaf. But the milk bread is very uniquely, it's a white bread, right? It's a white bread if you categorize, but it's mine is very, very rich and moist and dense. So it's not fluffy, right? It's soft, of course, but it's not fluffy, but the bread itself has a really good taste to it. And then when you toast it, you become plumpy, because because milk bread contains a lot of liquid. So that's why the bread don't get really dry easily. So when you toast it, it's plumpy. I know it's kind of weird to use that word to describe the bread. But you know, it's not even hua hua. It's like a plumpy. So I really wanted to taste, and I don't put any preserves because a lot of bread, they put a lot of preserve because how you can have the bread for two weeks without getting any mold or anything, right? So they put a lot of chemical things, and also use a lot of make. I'm sure they, you know, they put something to keep the bread really fluffy. Because right. So it's it make extremely soft, right? So but I don't put any of those things. Very simple, you know, ingredients, and it's just a ratio. I think it's just the baking bread is a chemical. It's like ratio of the ingredients and then timing and temperature, humidity. So right. Yeah, it's a lot of it's way harder than making okonomiyaki.
Right.
Okonomiyaki is so easy. Yeah. Compared to the bread. Yeah.
But I feel it was the same level of passion for your milk bread too.
Yeah.
Right. So, well, but you know, it's a good segue because the prevalence of good bread in Japan really shows that it's not just a rice country, right? We love flour.
Right.
And we like baking. And of course, okonomiyaki. So that's this.
Yeah, it's
topics.
Also flour. Yeah.
Right. So let's talk about it. So first of all, what is okonomiyaki?
Yeah, so okonomiyaki is like you said earlier a little bit in the beginning, okonomiyaki is one of the traditional Japanese food. And then mainly known as like a local specialty in Hiroshima Prefecture or Osaka. And then it's a flour dish. And then both, like I said, actually okonomiyaki contains like flours and vegetable. Maybe I can talk a little more detail about the ingredients, but it's a very simple dish, and then it contains a lot of cabbage, a lot of vegetable. So you can consume, you can take a lot, you know, it's very healthy, and it's versatile. You can put meat and seafood on the top of it. So it's very unique Japanese cuisine. Like you say, it's very, it's still under the radar. It's like not well known as sushi or ramen, but all the Japanese people knows about this dish, right? So
right. Everybody
knows about it, but not as popular as sushi or ramen here in the United States. So, and then, like I said, there are two kinds, yeah, Hiroshima style and Osaka style.
Yet I have to say that I'm from Tokyo, and my dad is from Kyushu, and
okay.
My mom is from Tokyo. So I kind of skipped the most main areas of okonomiyaki producing regions. So my level of knowledge or familiarity was very, very low. And it's probably compared to you, I'm like nothing. And my first exposure to okonomiyaki is, you know, in Japanese in households, there are electric hot plates that you can put on the table and then cook anything you want, including okonomiyaki. And I really loved it. It's even before the taste, it's the fun. You just put all the things and make it with the family, you know, table. Everybody's like laughing, you're not good at it. And then we just taste it. At the end, it's delicious anyways. So that's a very entertaining part.
Right.
Which features okonomiyaki
correct.
Very special
yes.
to me.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. So it can be served at the restaurant as okonomiyaki special, you know, it's like okonomiyaki shop, or you can make it at home, right? There are two different ways to taste it. Okay.
Yep.
All right. So what are the basic ingredients of okonomiyaki and how do you make it in general? Who had no idea what had to make it?
Okay. So, let's say, like I said, okonomiyaki has two kinds. One is Osaka style and the other one is Hiroshima style. So I always explain people, like, let's say computer, right? Mac and Windows are both computers, right? But we call it Mac and Windows are different, but it's both computer. So okonomiyaki is like that. Both call okonomiyaki, but it has a different style, like Mac and Windows. They're both computers, but it's two different styles. So, so Osaka style, so that's, you know, people kind of understand the concept, why there are two kinds, right? Like, you know, Chicago pizza, and then I guess, you know, deep dish, and then New York style pizza is different, right? Naples pizza is different. So I guess everybody calls one category, but it's kind of different style. So Osaka style, but both actually use mainly same ingredients, which is flour and water and egg and then cabbage. and scallion. So Osaka style is has a cabbage, scallion, I think the tempura crumbs, it's tenkatsu, and then some people put the gingers. So, and then okonomi means whatever you like, and yaki is grill. So you can technically put whatever you like, but Osaka style, the difference between Osaka Hiroshima style is the way they make it. So they Osaka style, you mix everything, just like a pancake, right? So you put the flour, you have a batter, and all the ingredients are mixed, and then you just, you know, bake it like you make a pancake. Versus Hiroshima style is you make a thin crepes and then put all the ingredients as a layer. So you don't mix all the vegetable with the batter. So you put the, make a thin crepe with the batter is made with flour and water. And then you put some kind of like a fish powder to give a little taste, and then put the cabbage, scallion. And then Hiroshima style, we usually use the bean sprouts. So put a little bit of bean sprouts, and then put the, you can put pork, sliced pork. I think that's main meat that we use for both okonomiyaki Osaka style as well. So thinly sliced pork belly you put on the top. So it's just a layer. And the Hiroshima style usually has a yakisoba noodle are added as one of the layer. So that's, I think, one of the biggest difference. But both use a large amount of cabbage. So I don't even know how you can consume that much cabbage besides okonomiyaki. I guess coleslaw maybe, but we use a lot of cabbages. Yeah.
So which one is Apple? Which one is Microsoft?
I would say maybe Windows is Osaka style and Hiroshima is Mac.
Okay, so Hiroshima is cool. I kind of agree.
No, I think unique. You know, it's more generic. Osaka style, anybody can, like you said, anybody can make it at home. Hiroshima style is a little, you know, tricky. Even Hiroshima people, we don't make it at home. We usually go to the restaurant to eat it. My mom was making it at home, but most of the people just go to the restaurant. You don't do it at home. But Osaka style, like you said, it's easy, right? And it's fun. So you just make, you know, like batter and like pancake, so you can make it at home. So it's easier. It's easy access, I think. Yeah.
Right. So it's kind of like reflecting the culture of Osaka, casual, fun, and quick, and economical. Make it quick. Right. I love that. So, and also, like, you add red pickle ginger sometimes. Like, sometimes you find red
stuff. Red pickle, ginger, mainly for Osaka style. Hiroshima style, we don't use any pickled ginger. Osaka style only, they put it.
Wow. I didn't know that, all those details. So, and one thing I was curious about, you know, Japanese people like the kind of sweet and salty sauce. That could be, you know, tonkatsu sauce and, you know, oyster sauce. So okonomi sauce is similar, right? So what kind of sauce is that you put on okonomi? Yes.
So okonomiyaki, we usually use the okonomi sauce, right? So like for like French fry, you use ketchup. Maybe, I don't know, like steak, maybe you would put A1 sauce. So it's like a specific sauce for this dish. So I use the okonomi sauce. And any brand, I think, especially, you know, made for okonomiyaki, a lot of brands call okonomi sauce. But I use the Otafuku sauce brand, okonomiyaki. It's a brown sauce. Everybody, what is the brown sauce? Like you say, it's sweet, a little bit salty. But those sauces are made, I'm not from the sauce brand, but the sauce is made with the veggie, dates. Dates give a little sweetness too. I'm sure they have some sugar in it, but dates and the fruits. So I usually explain, it's really hard to explain to the people. People come up, what kind of sauce is that? Right? And some people maybe say like kind of similar to teriyaki sauce, but I usually say it's a barbecue with soy sauce. That's how I describe it.
I think the truth is that, you know, teriyaki sauce, you can make it at home by yourself, but all those tonkatsu sauce, they're really like specific big company brands. And because they're so delicious, we don't bother making their own.
Right, exactly.
Tonkatsu sauce or okonomi sauce. Right. So, but I think basically it's lots of vegetables and fruits and then ketchup and some sugar.
Right.
So they're very similar.
Right, I think so.
Mm-hmm. And it's a very important element of okonomiyaki, because that's
the taste, right? That's the taste of okonomiyaki. I don't want to say you're eating the sauce, but for Japanese people, without sauce, it doesn't taste like okonomiyaki. I think that's part of it. Yeah.
Yeah. And also, I think you mentioned a couple of times that how much cabbage you put, but I think cabbage is a great source of umami and sweetness. So that's the texture also, if it's cooked kind of soft and crunchy at the same time, and it's addictive. So that's a key component of okonomiyaki.
Right. And then it's not, you know, it's not like a sauerkraut. It's a fresh cabbage. So it's not, it doesn't have any sour taste. But when you cook it, it's, you know, like you said, it gives a little bit, you know, the sweetness and the umami. And then Hiroshima style, because it's layer, right? You actually taste each ingredient more in compared to Osaka style, because we don't mix with the batter. So you just taste cabbage as a cabbage. You taste the scallion as a scallion. So some people prefer Hiroshima style because it's, you know, it's more veggier, I think. But my okonomiyaki, it's not doughy either. So even the Osaka style is very veggie, you know. But Hiroshima style is even more because it has no, you know, it's not mixed with the batter. So if you really want to taste the vegetable, Hiroshima style is actually tastes veggier, I think.
Right. Interesting. And so we can imagine, okonomiyaki is very popular in Japan. And I heard, according to one source, there are at least 9,000 okonomiyaki restaurants as of 2020. And on your website, you said it's over 20,000 okonomiyaki restaurants.
All over Japan.
Right. So it is more popular in the western part of Japan, like you said, in particular, you know, Hiroshima and Osaka, there's like, you know, ground zero of Hiroshima. So, although the okonomiyaki. So we'll talk about the regional characteristics more later, but why do you think okonomiyaki is so popular nationwide?
I think, you know, in Japan, right, a lot of Japanese cuisine is healthy without thinking, right? We consume a lot of vegetables, you know, without even thinking, like we have to take a lot of vegetables because we consume a lot of vegetables in a different way. And I think one of the reason that okonomiyaki, yes, it's healthy, but it's more like, I think, easy access, and it's kind of fun. Like you said, like, especially the Osaka style, you make it at home, like we have the hot plate, like, you know, those griddle, electric griddle, and it's easy to make. So I think, and then, I don't know, maybe the sauce is very, tasty. I think one of the best way to eat, you know, the vegetable, but I think it's really fun to make, and it's easy to make at home. I was talking to my friend, like they're always making for Saturday lunch, right, with the family. So it's, you know, we have to, and in Japan, we cook a lot at home. You know, of course we eat out, but we cook a lot at home. So I think it's one of the good addition to the repertoire, right, for the menu. Because sometimes it's kind of easy. So, okay, today let's just do the okonomiyaki. So I think easy access, easy to make. It's a fun thing to do. And I guess on the top of that, it's very healthy. And then also ingredients are very, you know, it's not expensive. It's a flour and, you know, vegetable. So I guess that's why it become really popular in the household.
Right. And if you have a bottle of okonomi sauce in your fridge, you're good to go anytime.
Right. And most of the people has it, I guess. So.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, like you said, you can cook it at home. And also I went to one time, you know, there is an okonomiyaki restaurant where you can bring other people as a group, you can cook and the servers can help you. Or last time we went to Osaka, there is one counter seat restaurant and there's a very skilled staff person making okonomiyaki. It was like an art. It's almost like a theater. So there are different ways to enjoy okonomiyaki visually and as an experience. So I think it's a huge potential for okonomiyaki in outside of Japan.
Yeah.
Right. So, and what is the origin and history of okonomiyaki, which I think is very interesting.
Yeah, you know, there are like a couple of the stories because like you said before, in Japan is known for rice country, right? We eat rice, but we eat flour. So like one of the story that, you know, I think I have to really study more, but one of the story that I've known is like early like 1900, like Taisho era, right? People start eating flour, but they just make a simple dish like crepes. Put the flour and water, make a batter and make a thin crepe and then just put like little bit of the vegetable or some kind of like a protein, like a fish, like or like meat, and then put like Worcestershire sauce, and then make it like a issen yoshoku, which is like very cheap snack, the Western style, because you put the sauce and flour, that's like more exotic Western cuisine. So I think that's kind of like a form of like a flour with like water. It's a batter cooked, you know, thin crepes and put something on the top of it. So that's kind of like started. And then of course, during the war, you know, Japan didn't have a lot of food. And then actually okonomiyaki become very, very popular after World War II. In Hiroshima, I don't know why that format of issen yoshoku turned into the two different style. I think Hiroshima kind of stayed with the origin more because we still make a thin crepe and put on the top of the crepe, we put ingredients, but not like before. Now they put more stuff. But and then Osaka, instead of making a crepes, I think they start making everything on one shot and mix everything and start cooking. So I think after World War II, because Japan started consuming a lot of flours, and then flour was cheaper, and then of course, you know, after the war, Japan didn't have a lot of food, so we get like, I think they got a lot of supply of flour from the United States, and then start using those flour, and the flour dish became very more popular and more accessible. And then one of the story I heard is in Hiroshima, right? Because I'm from Hiroshima, so I know more in Hiroshima side, but during the war, a lot of men went out to fight, right? To the outside of Japan. So a lot of women have to run the household. So a lot of people start cooking at the house and start selling food. So that's when they kind of start okonomiyaki format. Like they start cooking the okonomiyaki at house, and then we can make it kind of like a small restaurant. And start, a lot of women start selling okonomiyaki after the war because they have to earn some money without a man. So actually a lot of okonomiyaki in Japan still owned by a lot of like a female, because if it's not like a big chain, you know, a store, usually a lot of like house, they have like a little store, and then back of the store is like, you know, like somebody's house. So those people live back of the restaurant, and you know, so they make the front of the house as a restaurant. So they still have a lot of those little stores as well. So yeah, so that's why Hiroshima, actually a lot of okonomiyaki shop after the war started by women. Yeah, so I find it kind of very interesting. Yes.
Right. Yeah, and also I also heard that, you know, the reason there are a lot of cabbage in it, this started after World War II because we didn't have enough food because we lost the war.
Yeah.
So by adding cabbage and also yakisoba noodles, that was less expensive than compared to other things.
Right.
So it's a reflection of the history.
Right.
You know, right.
The survival, right. Making more nutritious. You know, they didn't have a lot of meat back then, so they couldn't meet. But like, you know, after like, not right after the war, but later in the year, Japan recover a little more and then start adding more stuff, making more nutritious, like me, you know. So it's kind of interesting. A lot of people don't know. I didn't even know about the detail of the histories, but this is very, you know, the okonomiyaki has very interesting story, you know, behind.
Right. And the other interesting fact I found, I was so curious. So the very, very origin of okonomiyaki, the original form of okonomiyaki was born because of Sen Norikyu, who is founder of Japanese tea ceremony.
Right.
And, you know, the tea ceremony master makes guests some kind of snack for right. the stomach not to be damaged by caffeine. So okonomiyaki, the original form was just a cake made out of flour. Right. And then he was serving it. And then eventually that was like, you know, 17th century.
Right.
And over time, like you described, it became completely different form. He didn't make, you know, bake okonomiyaki in his small tea room. But yeah, over time, it became more like live cooking with the heat.
Right.
So yeah, you don't expect tea ceremonies related to okonomiyaki. That's kind of like the complete opposite.
Yeah, they make a little snack, complement tea. And then already Sennoriki was using the flour dish, right? So I was also wondering, what makes you think that put the water and flour and mix it and, you know, grill it, and, you know, it became some, you know, become firm and it's, you know, you can eat it, right? So it's like, it's very interesting, right?
Like just one dish called okonomiyaki that packs a lot of history. So maybe we can discover more.
Right.
All right. So let's take a quick break here. And when we come back, we'll discuss different regional styles of okonomiyaki that Kazuko offers at Okonomi. So please stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Roberta's was founded in Bushwick in 2008 and has become one of the most iconic restaurants in the country. HRN made its home inside of Roberta's in 2009, and together they have become part of the DIY fabric of the neighborhood. Roberta's, the pizza restaurant, is open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week and serves much more than just the famous wood-fired pizzas. Their team dreams up new salads, pastas, and sandwiches on the regular. Roberta's Tiki Bar is alive and well in the back garden, serving up frozen drinks in the summer and hot toddies in the winter. Stop by the bakery and takeout spot next door for fresh breads, sticky buns, and pizzas to go. And of course, there's the 2 Michelin-starred Blanca tucked away in the garden for truly daring diners. But Roberta's also extends beyond Bushwick, with multiple locations in New York City and now in Los Angeles. You can also find their frozen pies in grocery stores around the country. The spirit of Roberta's, like Heritage Radio Network, is everywhere. Here's to many more years of pizza-powered radio. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Japanese. I'm your host, Akiko Tema, and my guest today is Kazuko Nagao, the founder of Okonomi, a new okonomiyaki shop based in Queens, New York. All right, so I heard that you've been cooking okonomiyaki at spring and summer events in New York for decades. So why did you start cooking okonomiyaki for the public?
Yes, so like I said, I'm from Hiroshima, and Hiroshima style is very unique okonomiyaki style, because what makes unique is like it's not available at so many like outside of Hiroshima. You have to go to a specialty store to go to Hiroshima style okonomiyaki. Osaka style is, you know, like you say, it's easy, everybody can make it at home. So I was actually cooking for my friends, because a lot of my friends, even Japanese friends, never eat Hiroshima style okonomiyaki. So I was cooking it for my friend. So, and then one day, the publication I've been doing, Peko Peko, I was interviewing this gastropub in East Village. It's called Jimmy's 43. He, you know, I think closed the shop because right next to his building had a big explosion a couple of years ago. But anyway, so Jimmy was so cool, so nice. And it's a gastropub, and then it's in the basement. It's kind of like it's not a speakeasy, but it has a very cozy place. And then he has another separate room. So he offered me, Kazuko, why don't you do okonomiyaki event? I don't even know he knew okonomiyaki, but somehow he offered me the space. I was like, okay, so I'll do it. So I did it, and then I got like 150 people showed up. The place was so packed and so small, but it was a huge event. It was really fun. That's when I really did the first event. And then after that, I met the people from the Okonomi Sauce Company, and then I got more involved. And then, I don't know if you remember, like, you know, early, like 2010, so many Japanese street festivals started. So I joined it. And at the beginning, I was helping Otahuku Salt because they need more people to help him. So I was helping. And then sometime I just did myself, but I didn't have any name or nothing. I was just making okonomiyaki and selling it at the festival. And then I was decided to join the flea market, which is called LIC Flea in Queens. So that time I really decided, you know what? I really named the name of the store because a lot of those, even the flea market, they have store names. So I was like, okay, I have to come up with some kind of name. So the okonomi means like abbreviation, right? Making shorter, the okonomiyaki. So I usually, in Japanese, I usually say okonomi instead of okonomiyaki. So that's why I decided to call it okonomi because it's easy, you know, to pronounce and everything. So that's when I started doing the LIC flea, and then one leads to another, and then I went to the Bryant Park, to the movie night, so the street, you know, and the event, and then I also joined the Smorgasburg in Brooklyn, which is one of the biggest and largest food flea market in the United States, which was 2017. I actually went audition. That event is very popular. So a lot of people want to be part of it. So they have a lot of applicants to want to have a store there. I mean, the stand there. So I apply, and then they always get a lot of application. And I somehow got a call back. Say, okay, I want to see what you have. So come to our office and then do the demonstration. So I actually brought a little electric griddle with me, and all the ingredients are already cut. And then I went to their office, and then I cooked in their meeting room. Okonomiyaki. But, you know, they have window open, so it was good because, you know, even the griddle, it kind of gets smoky. So I cooked it, and then I did the presentation. I wore a uniform, and then I have those, you know, the main guy from the Smorgasburg, and then I just cook in front of them and then showcase and explain what it is. And I got the spot in 2007. So since then, I joined the Smorgasburg. Yep. So, yeah. So I was actually planning kind of like one after another because if you start doing the events and other organizers start, you know, contacting, hey, you know, we're doing this event. Would you like to come? So I was like, oh, okay. So, and then one of the fun events that I did was the Bryant Park movie night. Every summer in the Bryant Park. So every, you know, the free movie night at the Bryant Park. So I did that for a couple of years.
Interesting. Right. So, it sounds like everything came out of your passion for your food from your hometown. Mm-hmm. And it's just genuine mission that you want to let people know how great it is. And I really respect your kind of mission.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. And what about, it sounds like, you know, especially Bryant Park, which is a very quintessential park in mm-hmm. New York. And it's very interesting to even imagine. I've never been there when you're selling it. But okonomiyaki is such a regional Japanese thing. And it's a part of this New York City iconic summer event. So yeah, it's amazing.
I always talk to my staff, you know, and I'm like, you know what? I think in the history, we could be the only one who cook okonomiyaki at the Bryant Park. You know,
right?
It's very, yeah. It's like I think we're the only one, which is amazing.
Yeah. Well, next time you go back, you get a red carpet at the Hiroshima station.
Yeah, I hope so.
Right. Okay. And then in December 2021, you turned your seasonal okonomiyaki business into regular operations throughout the year. So why did you decide to do that?
Yes. Like I said, you know, during the everything relates to the pandemic. 2020 pandemic hit. And then up until then, I was spring, my season was usually April to October, you know, on the weekends. I was doing a lot of events, which is fun and always busy. Sometimes, like, you know, I get those movie nights, sometimes different events. So when the busy time, I was making like almost like four times a week. I have a lot of events, but like just like anybody else, the pandemic shut down everything. So during that time, I was thinking, okay, so 2020, we have to, you know, be careful. So I was just, you know, not even thinking about like how we can get back to the business. I was like, you know, hope everybody stay home. I don't get sick. You know, my friends don't get sick. So, and then I was just spending a lot of time just baking bread to experimenting to cook like to the recipe. And then in 2021, last year, July, after the all the vaccination rollout, you know, almost, you know, everybody would get start getting vaccinated. And then the outdoor event actually reopened last year summer. So I went back to doing that. But during the pandemic and also this past year, that got me thinking, if we don't have a place to sell okonomiyaki, I was, you know, showcasing, introducing this dish, and then there's actually no place. Of course, there are Japanese restaurants serving okonomiyaki, like one of, you know, few places they specialize it. Some places has on their menu, but all this year I've been, you know, promoting this dish, and then I have no place to, you know, demonstrate or showcase or introduce. So there are only two ways to do: either me opening up a restaurant, or just have a place to cook and just, you know, serve or sell. And then, of course, I was, you know, I've been supporting a lot of restaurants, promoting them, but I know how hard it is to have a restaurant, right? You need a lot of funding, you know, manpower. So I was more into, if I can manage on my own and a smaller scale, so maybe I can focus on just delivery and pickup. Like ghost kitchen, you know, that happened a lot during the pandemic. So I decided to do that route because, so that allows me, once the season starts again, I can also do a lot of outdoor events using the kitchen and prepping. And also at the same time, I can just do the delivery and pickup using those delivery platforms. So that would be more manageable for me. So that's one of the reasons that I decided to do the seasonal business, the regular operation. So regular operation meaning that it's not a restaurant, it's just a delivery and pickups only.
Okay, great. So so your business, Okonomi, spells OCONOMI, not like original OKONOMI.
Right.
It's Okonomi, just so the listeners can find it on Google.
Yes.
So it's Okonomi. So what do you offer on the menu at Okonomi?
Okay, so I offer mainly three things. Of course, I have a lot of, you know, the appetizers and stuff like that. But main okonomiyaki is Osaka style and Hiroshima style and the modern yaki, which, so those are three main okonomiyaki menu that I have. So I already explained Hiroshima style and Osaka style. So what is modern yaki? So modern yaki is actually Osaka style okonomiyaki plus yakisoba noodle and egg, fried egg on the top. So it's kind of like a layer of Osaka style okonomiyaki with a yakisoba noodle and egg.
Wow. So that's much bigger, richer.
It's more. Mm. Yeah. But Hiroshima style already have noodle too, the yakisoba noodle with the egg. Mm-hmm. So yeah. So Osaka style is just a pancake. Yeah.
Mm, right. So in this case, the noodles are mixed in instead of as a layer. So that's the difference. And also you add...
No, the modern yaki is also kind of layer. Layer of the Osaka style okonomiyaki, and then yakisoba on the top and the fried noodle on the top.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Okay. So it's kind of like the hybrid of both.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So it's called the modern, like modern yaki means modern, right? So what's...
Yeah, I think it's modern yaki, right? But I think it's coming from the modern. Right. Uh-huh. But I think it's more popular in Osaka, and then I'm not sure about why it's called modern yaki. Maybe it's fancier. I guess not. Right. This is my homework. I have to find it. But, you know, that's
so is it new? Relatively new. Do you know when it came out to the market?
But it's been a couple, you know, it's not like a really new. It's, you know, because when I was in college, I was already eating it in Osaka.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, right. So it's not like a hybrid, but it's not like a new thing.
Mm, interesting. Now, that's good to know. All right. So there's a question about how competitive people get between Hiroshima and Osaka. So culturally, right. they're very strong, right? So how important is that? You say that, you know, you mix up the two, do they get upset?
Okay, so this is very interesting questions. Because like with Osaka style is more generic. So a lot of people, I think even in Japan, most of the people you say okonomiyaki, they think about the Osaka style, which is all mixed up, right? You make it at home. So, and then that's Osaka style, right? So Osaka style okonomiyaki, people think it's automatically that's okonomiyaki. So then what makes Hiroshima style okonomiyaki? So what is it then, right? So a lot of people outside of Hiroshima sometimes call Hiroshima yaki, just to distinguish from the Osaka style. So if Osaka style is okonomiyaki, and then they call Hiroshima yaki, because it's kind of confusing if you call it okonomiyaki. But for Hiroshima people, it's not Hiroshima yaki. For Hiroshima people, Hiroshima style is Hiroshima style okonomiyaki. That's okonomiyaki to us. So right. That's okonomi. So Hiroshima people usually call Osaka style okonomiyaki. Hiroshima people don't call Osaka yaki, because we respect okonomiyaki, Osaka style. So so it's kind of like a funny, in a joking way, a lot of people say, oh, Hiroshima people get very upset if you call it Hiroshima yaki, right? Don't call it in front of Hiroshima people, it's Hiroshima yaki, because people get really upset, or, you know. It's in a joking manner, but yeah, so to us, Hiroshima style okonomiyaki is a okonomiyaki to us, right? So, if you say who's going to get upset more, I think Hiroshima people get upset more if it's mixed up, I think. Right. Yeah.
So basically, if you visit Hiroshima and then you find okonomiyaki shop, you basically expect Hiroshima style.
Exactly.
Okonomiyaki,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Right.
So if it's Osaka style, they specifically say it. Because like you say, if in Hiroshima, if you go to okonomiyaki shop, you know, what they serve is Hiroshima style okonomiyaki automatic.
Interesting.
I know it's very interesting because Hiroshima doesn't have a lot to offer, because we our main food culture, the main item is okonomiyaki and oyster, and then I think the momiji manju, which is like a sweet, like treat. So we don't have, compared to other bigger city, we don't have a lot of like regional cuisine. So we have a lot of pride in okonomiyaki, because Osaka got so much, you know, takoyaki. They have so many other things, right? But Hiroshima is like, Hiroshima style okonomiyaki is one of the most popular, you know, or like very signature dish for us. So I guess the Hiroshima people get really, you know, really have a pride.
Right. Well, considering the different size of the city, you know, Hiroshima and Osaka, yeah, it's like a precious soul food. So, yeah, I really respect Hiroshima okonomiyaki. And there's a big, beautiful sake producing area in Hiroshima.
Yeah.
So, right, it's a good place to visit. By the way, does it take much longer to make Hiroshima style okonomiyaki than Osaka, because you have to layer things, right?
Time-wise, not, but you have to layer, you have to put the layer of ingredients. That means it takes more actions, right? You have to put one after another. Osaka style, you just mix it and then put it on the top. So it's definitely easier to make.
Right.
Less work, I would say.
Right. It's more technically challenging. Okay, so which one is your favorite? It's a stupid question. I know the answer, but
yeah.
What's
of course, I'm from Hiroshima, so I have to choose Hiroshima style okonomiyaki. But I really like Osaka style, especially that we make, because like I said, we don't make it doughy, so it's very light. Like, you know, you can put, you know, like takoyaki is very doughy, right? Because that's what it is. Takoyaki is more doughy. And then Osaka style okonomiyaki, if you want to make it doughy, like you can make, you know, put a lot of flours and less ingredients. Of course, like pancake, right? Like pancake, if you don't put anything like a blueberry or banana or anything, it's really doughy. So So yeah, my Osaka style is very less doughy, so that's why, you know, a lot of people likes it.
Right. Okay. So how do who are your clients, first of all, and what how they react to your okonomiyaki?
Yeah. So since I started the delivery service, right, this past December, it's still the less than 2 months. We get for that platform, we get I'll say like 20. Thanks to my Japanese community, I would say like 20% of Japanese customer right now, because it's really rare to find on the, you know, if you're browsing the Uber Eats or whatever the platform, oh, I want to eat something, and then you really don't find okonomiyaki, but I guess I joined like December, so people start finding us. So 20% of Japanese customers, and then the rest, you know, of course, this is delivery and pickup, so I don't really see the customers, I only see the names when we receive the orders. The Japanese name is easy to distinguish, so that's why I can tell. It's, I would say, 20% the Japanese customers. And then, and then reactions, of course, delivery, we don't know, but we already start getting, like, repeat customers, even the non-Japanese customers as well. So I guess we find, okay, I guess they like it because they order again. And also the festival, that's another story because it's right there. And we get, you know, see the customers right, you know, in front of our face. And then, so their reaction is very interesting because a lot of people who never eaten it, and then they love it, and they even come back to a booth and they, oh my God, it was so good. Thank you so much, you know. So people who never eaten okonomiyaki, they like it, and then they come back and they give us a compliment. That's really, you know, so that's reaction that, you know, that sometimes, you know, we get, especially people who never eaten okonomiyaki, they find it like very, you know, tasty and so good. So, yeah, so that's kind of a great reaction from the customers.
Right. So sounds like okonomiyaki has a global appeal because it's simple, but it's really rich and approachable. And you know, you said it's light and healthy. So that's amazing. So, well, I'm sure, you know, we talked about you can make okonomiyaki at home. So some listeners are interested in cooking okonomiyaki at home. So do you have any simple recipe that they can try?
Yes. So, of course, you can, you know, there is nothing that you cannot find on the internet right now. So, of course, it's, you know, any recipe that you can find. But just to get an idea, Osaka style, I think, recommend because it's easier to make, at the, you know, for the beginner. So all you need is a butter, which is flour and water, and then cabbage, scallion, and pickled ginger, like the red pickled ginger. You might not find it at the regular, like a supermarket. So it's optional. Of course, you can go to Japanese supermarket. You can just get everything at the Japanese supermarket. But if not, if it's a regular, you know, supermarket substitution, one time I didn't get the red ginger. So sometimes I bought a real ginger and I minced it and I put a little bit to just give a kick. Or sometimes I get like a zucchini and make it like a dice and then put it in. And sometimes I put the red pepper or orange peppers, like bell peppers, and then those are good. So, and then I also put the kale and then corn, which is not traditional in Japan, but you know, but that gives like nice color and then very tasty. So you can just put whatever you like because okonomi is whatever you like. So you can put it and just mix it and put egg, a cracked egg, and just put the egg and then mix it. And then just grill it on the if you don't have a like a griddle, flat top, you know, griddle, just use the pan and then just make it just like you're making a pancake. And then you flip it, and then sometimes you want to make sure that things get cooked, so you put the cover, if you have a cover in a pan, and then you're good to go.
Okay, that sounds great. So how, for those who are not willing to cook, how can we order your okonomiyaki?
Okay, so right now, of course, you can, there's a radius, right? Not all the region are delivery area. But for delivery, we are based in like Queens, Sunnyside, so Long Island City, Astoria, Utsai, some part of, I think, Manhattan. like a Midtown East, very like really east side, like First Avenue, Second Avenue around there, maybe the delivery area. So you can go to the Uber Eats, all those platforms, Grubhubs, Seamless, DoorDash. You can look for Okonomi, not the K, but with the C, O-C-O-N-O-M-I. You can Google it, and we have, so you can order it, those platforms, and they also have a pickup, I think, that you can choose the pickup if you want to come and pick up, which is the sunny side. There's the address there, so you can order it, and then hopefully this year, last year we started July, but hopefully this year we can go back to the regular schedule for the outdoor events, which usually start in April. And once that thing started, we're going to be at the Smorgasburg on Saturday and Sunday.
Okay, so there's something to look forward to for the summer. Hopefully, COVID is going to be in control way more than
yes,
now.
Yes, I hope so. Right. Keep fingers crossed.
Right. So what are your plans and dreams?
Okay, my plan is I would like to have more opportunity to introduce okonomiyaki outside of New York. So hopefully, you know, we become more successful in New York, and then I'd like to expand to other states.
Awesome. All right. Then eventually you get a statute in Hiroshima.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this is very interesting. For example, right, the Smorgasburg, they're expanding to Miami, and they're already doing LA. So they have, you know, other locations. So, you know, if I can just pop in those events, maybe I can introduce okonomiyaki. Or if I have, you know, go on franchise, who knows? Whoever wants to do other states, because I learned that it's really difficult to expand your business on your own. But if you have somebody who interested in okonomiyaki, wanted to do in other states, you know. So there's other way to do, to expand my business. So that's what I'd like to look into. But of course, because the pandemic, everything got in a stop and delay. So I'd like to kind of like restart and then introduce more okonomiyaki to New Yorkers. And then once you become popular in New York, I'm sure that will bring more attention to okonomiyaki from other parts of the country. So that's my plans and dreams. Yeah.
Right. Sounds great. Good luck. And I hope you have more time for milk bread and also salsa dancing and everything else. So
I know milk bread. Yeah, big five. Yeah.
Right. So, and where can we find your updates online and on social media?
Okay. So I think the social media is the most updated one. So, which is Okonomi, OCONOMI_NYC. That's Instagram. And also we have a website. Okonomi.nyc.
Okay.
OCONOMI.nyc.
So sounds like it's going to be a lot more going on towards the summer and beyond. So, well, good luck and thank you so much for joining us today, Kazuko.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. So listeners, if you have any questions or comments about the show or suggestions for show topics or guests, please contact us at japaneats@heritageradionetwork.org or akikoatema.com. Japaneats is a weekly program and always available at heritageradionetwork.org as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. I'm Jinae's Armin Spension, and thank you for listening. I will see you next week.
Japaneats is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a non-profit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thank you for listening.
Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Latham.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.